Picture this. You're a urologist, and your current patient tells you, slightly panicked, that he's been considering getting a vasectomy, but his friend recently told him that people who get a vasectomy don't ejaculate anything afterwards. This patient is a 39-year-old man who has a wife and three children, and they are not planning to grow their family any further. What will you tell him about what's involved in a vasectomy? Hi, and welcome to Audio Breaks. My name is Alex Dennis, and this is the break on the anatomy and the histology of the male reproductive system. But first, a quick shout out to the learning platform that makes Audio Bricks possible, the RX Bricks, which is the source of all content you hear on this podcast. And if you've been holding off on checking this out, well, now's the time. We're running a promotion where you can get a full Brick subscription for 50% off using the code RXPOD. That's RXPOD, as in RX Podcast. The link to the Bricks is in the show notes along with the promo code. Let's kick this off. After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Identify and describe the anatomy and histology of the male reproductive organs and their functions. 2. Describe the arterial supply and venous and lymphatic drainage of the male reproductive organs. And 3. Describe the autonomic innervation of the male reproductive organs. In ancient Rome, two men taking an oath of allegiance held each other's testicles to signify their commitment. In addition, men held their own testicles as a sign of truthfulness while giving testimony in the forum. In fact, the word testify comes from the ancient Latin word for testicle, testis. In male-centric Rome, evidently, maleness equated to truth and honesty. Although the notion was perhaps not so accurate as history reveals, the charming custom of mutual testicle holding lives on in the baboon community. Part 1. What are the anatomy and histology of the male reproductive system? As you've probably gleaned by now, this episode is all about male reproductive anatomy, including the testicles. We'll stick mostly to structures here because male reproductive function and details of the male sexual response are covered in other bricks, which, shameless plug, are totally worth a check. Let's start with the basic setup, the organization of the male reproductive organs. External male reproductive organs include the penis, testes, scrotum, and epididymis. The external surface spanning the penis and anus is termed the perineum and includes the scrotal sac. This area is rich with sensory nerves important in sexual arousal. We'll start off with the testes and the epididymis, but our focus is primarily on the internal reproductive organs, the ductus deferens, also known as the vas deferens, the seminal vesicles, the prostate gland, and the bulbourethral glands. Alright, so the testes are where sperm, the male contribution to egg fertilization, are made. The sperm take a long journey through the ductus deferens to merge with the secretions of the seminal vesicles. This combination empties into the urethra, which also drains urine from the bladder. The prostate gland produces key fluids, proteins, and nutrients that support the sperm, and those will all join in at the level of the prostatic urethra, which refers to the region of the urethra that runs through the prostate. Semen, which then consists of sperm, prostatic fluid, and seminal fluid, exits through the spongy or penile urethra within the erect penis during ejaculation. Now that we have the big picture, let's go into more detail about the various organs, starting with, well, our starting point. Testes are the male gonads, the male counterparts of the female ovaries. Testes are responsible for spermatogenesis, i.e. the production of sperm, as well as the synthesis of various sex hormones, including testosterone. Unlike the ovaries, which lose their reproductive capability after menopause, the testes are active throughout the male lifespan. Two testes are contained within the scrotum, a sac located underneath the penis consisting of smooth muscle and skin. We said sperm are produced in the testes. Let's zoom in on that. Picture the oval-shaped testis. A set of coiled tubes, called the seminiferous tubules, exist throughout most of the testes, separated by septae, and therefore each in their own lobule. They exist throughout most of the testes except where they converge at the exit point of the testis. This point of convergence, still within the testis, is called the reti testis. The seminiferous tubules are the site of spermatogenesis. That's where sperm undergo meiosis to become gametes. Once sperm reach the reti testis, which again lies distal to the straight seminiferous tubules, they are transported distally to the epididymis, a long, convoluted tube that lies posterior to the testis. If you've ever seen a picture, the epididymis is the whole structure that directly covers the testis. The epididymis functions as the structure for sperm storage and maturation. Let's break here for our first question. What is the site immediately distal to the straight seminiferous tubules? That site is called the reti testis. And quick follow-up, what is the function of the epididymis? The epididymis stores sperm. In terms of its histology, the epididymis is covered by two layered pseudostratified epithelia. Next, the ductus deferens. The ductus deferens is a pair of long tubules that connect the epididymis to the seminal vesicles to form the ejaculatory ducts. The convoluted portion attached to the epididymis becomes straight as it courses towards the ejaculatory duct. And since these tubules are very long and serve only the function to relay sperm, there's a brilliant doctor who once thought they might be the perfect site of ligation to engender permanent contraception. Actually, that's a lie. The first trial of human vasectomy was actually meant to bring about atrophy of the prostate, but hey, that's often how science works. To be clear, modern-day vasectomy involves severing both ductus deferens, which leads to permanent contraception without any other effects. With regards to histology, the ductus deferens is also pseudostratified, similar to the epididymis, but also ciliated to help with sperm motion. So it is ciliated, pseudostratified columnar epithelium. Within its wall are three layers of smooth muscle, a central layer with fibers circling the lumen, and two surrounding longitudinal layers with fibers running parallel to the luminal tube. Together, these layers contract reflexively and powerfully to propel sperm forward during ejaculation. A layer of serosa surrounds the ductus deferens, blood and lymphatic vessels, and nerves, making up the spermatic cord. The spermatic cord is wrapped in three layers of tissues: the external spermatic fascia, the cremasteric muscle, and the internal spermatic fascia, which from inwards to outwards spell out ICE. Now onto the seminal vesicles. The seminal vesicles produce a secretion that contains various proteins, enzymes, and nutrients. It has an especially high concentration of fructose, which provides energy for the sperm. Think about it as sperm filling up their tank halfway on their road trip. Fructose makes up roughly 70 to 85% of the total seminal fluid volume. The seminal vesicles also produce the protein semenogelin, which makes semen coagulate. Yellow pigmented lipofuscin granules made of dead epithelial cells can also be present and give seminal fluid a yellowish tint. In terms of histology, the seminal vesicles are tubular glands made of, you guessed it, pseudostratified columnar epithelial cells. No need for cilia since no sperm are actually going in these seminal vesicles. Seminal fluid exits the vesicles via excretory ducts, which merge with the ductus deferens to form the ejaculatory ducts. These empty into the urethra. Whew, I think we're at a good breaking point. Let's take a deep breath and try a question. What organ produces the bulk of semen? The bulk of semen is produced by the seminal vesicles, and roughly 70 to 85% of semen is made up of fructose. On to the prostate gland now, another significant contributor to semen. The prostate is a walnut-sized exocrine gland wedged between the bladder and the rectum. It is bound superiorly by the bladder and posteriorly by the rectum. This is why a portion of the prostate can be felt through the anterior wall of the rectum during a digital rectal exam. The prostate produces an alkaline fluid that makes up a third of the seminal fluid. This alkaline fluid helps neutralize the acidic environment of the vagina and prolongs the life of sperm. The prostate makes up the prostatic segment of the urethra. Within the prostate, the two ejaculatory ducts merge at the prostatic urethra, sharing a common passage for semen ejaculation. So, what ensures a unilateral flow of semen outward? A sphincter at the base of the bladder prevents urination during ejaculation, but weakness of the sphincter can cause retrograde ejaculation, in which sperm go backward into the bladder rather than outward, and this can lead to infertility. The histology of the prostatic tissue is slightly more complex than the previous tissues we covered. Prostatic tissue is divided into three major zones. There's the peripheral zone, which comprises up to 70% of the total volume of the prostate, and that's the most common site for prostate cancer. Then there's the central zone, which comprises roughly 25% of the prostate volume and surrounds the ejaculatory ducts. And finally, there's the transitional zone, which makes up only 5% of the prostate volume, but is responsible for most symptoms of benign prostatic hyperplasia. That's because the enlarging transitional zone compresses the prostatic urethra, which should cue you in on its location. The anterior fibromuscular stroma is a thickened area of tissue that surrounds the apex of the prostate. Let's pause here for a knowledge check. Which zone of the prostate is most responsible for the symptoms produced by benign prostatic hyperplasia? The transitional zone is most responsible for the symptoms produced by benign prostatic hyperplasia. The prostate is composed of concentric glands, including periurethral, submucosal, and main mucosal glands. The glands are lined with pseudostratified epithelium and often contain calcified secretions of unknown significance called corpora amylacea. All right, let's now bring in a new structure to this episode, the bulbourethral glands. The bulbourethral glands, also known as the Cowper glands, are located immediately distal to the prostatic urethra at the base of the penis, above the penis, below the prostate. These glands secrete a clear fluid that helps lubricate the distal urethra and also neutralize its acidic pH, preparing for the passage of sperm during ejaculation. This pre-ejaculate does not contribute to the final volume of seminal fluid, unlike the secretions of the other glands we previously discussed. That being said, of course, pre-ejaculatory fluid may or may not contain sperm. This is a reason that withdrawing the penis from the vagina prior to ejaculation is ineffective as a birth control measure. And to be thorough, let's cover the histology of the bulbourethral glands. The bulbourethral glands are tubular alveolar glands, meaning that their structure has both tubular and alveolar components. Within the glands are several lobules, each made of Acini cells. So we've successfully tracked sperm from their inception at the seminiferous tubules all the way to the urethra. For sticking through it, you deserve a prize. None other than my all-time favorite mnemonic for the male reproductive system. 7-Up. It summarizes the entire passage of ejaculation in order. Pause and see if you can figure it out. Ready? Here it goes. Seminiferous tubules, epididymis, vas or ductus deferens, ejaculatory ducts, then there's nothing, urethra, and penis. Part 2. What are the vascular supply and lymphatics of the male reproductive organs? Now that we have a good idea of the structure and basic function of each organ, let's turn to their circulatory supply. The blood supply to the visceral organs deep in the pelvis arises from the common iliac artery. The exception to this is the blood supply to the testes. The testes receive blood from the left and right gonadal arteries, also known as the testicular arteries. Unlike the arteries supplying other reproductive organs, the gonadal arteries branch off the abdominal aorta. I remember this by thinking that testes are the male equivalent of ovaries, which sit much higher than the testes and are also fed by the gonadal arteries from the abdominal aorta. If you want to go one step further, in the embryo, the testes actually start out at the same place the ovaries do, and then make their way down as the fetus grows. Venous drainage of the testes is slightly trickier. Both testes initially drain separately into a network of tiny veins along the spermatic cord, the pampiniform plexus. The right pampiniform plexus drains via the right gonadal vein, or testicular vein, directly into the inferior vena cava. The left gonadal vein, in contrast, first drains into the left renal vein before draining into the inferior vena cava. The practical implication here is that there's a higher tendency for the left testicle to develop a varicocele, which is an abnormal dilation of the pampiniform plexus from the back above blood there because of the gravity working on the column of blood in this vein. Let's now move on to the prostate. The prostate gets its blood supply primarily from the inferior vesical artery, a branch of the internal iliac artery. The prostate first drains into the prostatic plexus and then into the internal iliac vein, which is connected to the vertebral venous plexus. So, connection between the prostatic and vertebral plexuses provides a route for metastasis of prostate cancer to the vertebrae. This is why vertebrae are the most common site for prostate cancer metastasis. The inferior vesical artery occurs only in the male and, in addition to the prostate, supplies the seminal vesicles and part of the bladder. It also gives rise to the artery of the ductus deferens and the prostatic artery. The remaining reproductive organs receive their vascular supply from one of the two terminal branches of the common iliac artery, in our case, the internal iliac artery. This vessel begins at the level of the intervertebral disc between L5 and S1, and the anterior branches of this artery supply blood to the reproductive viscera. Let's see if that stuck with a question. Which vessels supplying reproductive organs do not arise from the internal iliac artery? The testicular arteries arise from the abdominal aorta. So now let's briefly cover lymphatics. The testes drain their lymphatic fluids to the para-aortic lymph nodes via the lymphatic vessels, also called lymphatics, that run alongside the gonadal arteries. These lymph nodes lie just anterior to the lumbar vertebrae near the abdominal aorta. They are the most common site for internal metastasis of testicular cancers, and the scrotum, although it is nearby, is drained to the inguinal lymph nodes. Let's briefly break here for another question. Where is the most likely location of testicular tumor metastasis? Testicular tumors most often metastasize to the para-aortic lymph nodes. Let's move on to our final content section of the episode, the neurovascular supply. Part 3. What is the autonomic innervation of the male pelvic organs? In general, sympathetic innervation of the testes comes from T10, T11, whereas the rest of the pelvic organs receive their sympathetic innervation from L1, L2. Again, remembering that testes are the male equivalent to ovaries should help you remember this dichotomy. The parasympathetic innervation of the testes comes from the vagus nerve, whereas the pelvic organs receive their parasympathetic innervation from nerves that arise from S2 to S4, known as the pelvic splanchnic nerves. These nerves are located bilaterally on the walls of the rectum and are close to the prostate. Let's try a question on this. Where do sympathetic and parasympathetic innervation arise in the testes? The testes receive sympathetic innervation from T10, T11, and parasympathetic innervation from the vagus nerve. Now, here are the functions of the autonomic nerves you should be aware of when it comes to the male reproductive system. Parasympathetic nerves increase secretions of the seminal vesicles and prostate, promoting semen formation. Parasympathetic nerves dilate penile blood vessels, promoting erection, whereas sympathetic nerves constrict and inhibit. During ejaculation, The sympathetic nervous system contracts the smooth muscle of the ductus deferens and causes it to produce strong peristaltic contractions to propel sperm to the urethra. A helpful mnemonic to remember these nervous functions is point and shoot. Point for parasympathetic and erection, shoot for sympathetic and ejaculation. And that's it. We covered the tumultuous first world segment of the male gametes, and that's all I have today on the anatomy and histology of the male reproductive system. Let's see what you want to be taking away from this episode. Let's start off broad. What organ is responsible for spermatogenesis? The testes are responsible for spermatogenesis, as well as the synthesis of various sex hormones, including testosterone. Then, where is sperm stored and maintained? The epididymis, a tubular structure that directly covers the testis, is the site of sperm maintenance and storage. From the seminiferous tubules, through which structures do sperm travel to reach the ejaculatory ducts? Sperm is made in the seminiferous tubules. From there, it travels to the reedy testis, through the epididymis, up the vas or ductus deferens, to merge with the secretions of the seminal vesicles. And speaking of, what is the function of the seminal vesicles? Seminal vesicle secretion makes up 70 to 85% of the total seminal fluid volume, and it consists mainly of fructose, which acts as fuel to sperm. Now, what is the function of the prostate? Recall that the prostate is a walnut-sized exocrine gland wedged between the bladder and the rectum. It produces the alkaline fluid that makes up a third of the seminal fluid. What is the difference between the arterial supply to the testes compared to the rest of the male reproductive organs? The testes receive blood from the left and right gonadal arteries, or testicular arteries, while the other reproductive organs are fed via the common iliac artery. And finally, how is venous drainage different from the left to the right testis, and what is the significance of this difference? Venous blood from the right testis drains directly into the inferior vena cava, whereas venous blood from the left testis drains into the left renal vein, making this testis more susceptible to varicocele development. Armed with your newfound knowledge, think back to your patient from earlier in the episode. He and his wife have 3 kids, and they don't wish to have any more. Your patient was considering getting a vasectomy, but his friend made him worry he might not have an ejaculate after this procedure. What do you tell him about what's involved in a vasectomy? You swiftly establish that his friend is misinformed, and offered to go over male anatomy briefly. Sperm is made in the testes, and then the sperm moves through a set of tubes called the vas deferens. These tubes are what are tied off in a vasectomy. However, 2 other structures contribute most of the volume of the ejaculate, the seminal vesicles and the prostate. These are not altered during a vasectomy, so the volume of the ejaculate doesn't change much at all. It just doesn't have sperm in it, which, of course, is the main reason for the vasectomy. Your patient is quickly relieved by your reassurance and jokes that maybe he should think twice about taking his lawyer friend's medical insight for granted. And that's our show. Make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you like what you heard. Remember, your feedback always helps us improve. And again, now's your chance to get 50% off the RX Bricks by following the link in the show notes below and typing in the promo code RXPOD, like RX Podcast. It's a huge discount on the written material that serves as the foundation of Audio Bricks, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already, and help keep AudioBricks free. Until next time, take care.